Hi, my name is Eric Forrest, and welcome to the Whiteboard Podcast. Whiteboard is a podcast that invites recent design grads to be candid with faculty on their time as a student. These are the conversations that profs and students should have but can't, exploring the intersecting needs of students, faculty, the education system, and the job market as a whole. My guest today is Aidan Dennehy.
Aidan Dennehy is an honor roll graduate from Humber's Media Communications program. He's a talented UI and UX designer and developer. He knows his way around the entirety of Adobe Creative Suite and is knowledgeable in half a dozen programming languages. Aidan is an active contributor to Ryerson's Toastmasters International chapter, where he fosters public speaking and leadership skills. He channels his designerly and loquacious mind into the successful podcast, Standard Humans. Welcome, Aidan.
Thanks for having me. Really excited to be here.
Oh, it's great. It's great to have you. So Standard Humans Podcasts, what do you do there?
Well, it is a podcast about two standard issue humans trying to become the best humans they can be. So what that is me and a buddy of mine just talking about a lot of different topics. It's hard to generalize it, but we cover a lot of general self-help ideas, a lot of exercise, nutrition. We've been getting into philosophy more lately, just been enjoying that. So it's a lot of topics, but we just try and condense it all down or make it such that we can understand it and that other, you know, standard issue humans can understand it as well.
That's great. What is a standard issue human?
Just a normal human being, someone who's probably interested in getting better in some way, maybe being a little bit healthier in some way, but hasn't really looked into it too much, doesn't, you know, have a degree, have much specialized ideas in it, just your average Joe or Jane trying to get through their life. What can we figure out that might be of help to
right.
them?
Yeah. Awesome. So you mentioned that you're kind of getting into philosophy. How did you, it just kept popping up, or how did that come about?
I think it's something that we touched on a few times. Like, we get into areas occasionally of like, what does it actually mean to have a good life, or what's the point? We hadn't really touched on it directly, but in a lot of episodes we'd start veering towards that. But I think what really also pushed us there was when I watched the show The Good Place, if you're familiar with it.
I am not.
Yeah, it's a show basically about the afterlife. It's just this group of people in the afterlife, and one of them's a philosophy professor, and the whole thing is quite funny. It's a very good show, but I just really appreciated the overview of philosophy and the different ideas that they covered in the show, and I wanted to know more about it, and it turned out so did Evan, my podcasting partner. So we've just been trying to explore it more. I think we have an episode on the Tao Te Ching up already, and we're planning one on Marcus Aurelius's meditations soon. So
that's incredible. It's such a philosophy gives you a useful vocabulary, I find, because there's like names for things that you never realized had names. And then once you, I mean, I guess it's similar to design, you know, once you have that vocabulary, you can start to have the conversations you need to solve problems. And philosophy is just, in my view, another lexicon for solving problems.
Yeah, definitely. And I think a lot of it too, it feels like a little bit of a shortcut in a way, or trying to not reinvent the wheel, because there's been thousands of years of the like brightest minds trying to think these things through. So you don't have to try and reinvent it all yourself. You can try and figure out, okay, what are the best ideas we as a species really have come up with, and what do I think about those? What can I use them? How can I use them?
Shoulders of giants.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. Awesome. So, and you talk about the best of ideas. Now, another thing I've heard you talk about is being, I guess, a manifestation of the best ideas, or I think how you put it was being so good that nobody can ignore you, or that they can't ignore you. Tell me, what does that mean?
Yeah, so that is an idea that I got from a book I read by Cal Newport called So Good They Can't Ignore You. But the overall, the big concept there is that, or it is about how to get a job that you really like, how to find employment that you really enjoy and get a lot of pleasure out of. And the real simple idea at the center of that is that if you want a job that's really valuable, that's really something that's very rare, there's not too many out there, and if you want that valuable job, you have to be able to offer something valuable in return, something rare in return. And when it comes to a job, what you have to offer are skills. So you need to develop skills that are so good, so valuable, so rare that you're able to trade them for a great job. So you need to make sure that your skills, you develop them to the point where they are so good that people aren't able to ignore you.
Right. Man, I'm getting flashbacks of a wedding when I was like in my early 20s. I was at a wedding and I was like half in the bag, and my dad's buddy, who's kind of like an uncle, like that kind of like lifetime friend, was also half in the bag, and he like cornered me, and he had just read, I think it was Eckhart Tolle or something like that, Eckhart Tolle. Okay. And it was a similar thing where it was like, find something and be the best at it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it just made me feel like it again, but in a good way. So how do you, like, what kind of paths do you take to get there?
Mm-hmm. I mean, one of the things that I struggle with, because, and this will probably come up a lot, is that I have a lot of different interests. I like a lot of different things. I would be studying like 36 different topics right now if I was physically capable or if I had that kind of time. But the areas that I've tried to, or I've been able to narrow down on, one for a while was computer science. So on top of the diploma that I'm getting, I got a professional certificate in computer science for web development from HarvardX, which is basically Harvard courses just online, which was quite good. And the idea there was that I would just spend a couple of hours every day going through the material, either watching the lectures or like really practicing doing the assignments. And the point of that was that it was something that was pushing me to the limit, was pushing my skills to new levels. And it was something that, again, just developing new skills that would be valuable or that I could use. So in that case, it was computer science. I've also lately been trying to do it more specifically with like WordPress, trying to really develop those skills, understand that system for building websites so I can use that to try and get a job. And then there are a few other areas that I'm considering going into. But again, I'm just trying to focus myself down onto that.
Right. I'm reminded of a George Carlin routine where, I mean, I consider what you've done self-taught. But there's like a George Carlin routine where he says, like, it's not a self-help book if you didn't write the book yourself.
Wait, what?
George Carlin, so you're an autodidact, it seems. You're teaching yourself things, although, you know, you did take a course. It's still on your own initiative, right? And it's not part of a larger system. It's not like it's streamed, right? It's not like it's a valuable credential, but it's not like it provides a clear path or the idea of a clear path anywhere. And so you're teaching yourself things, which is awesome. I wonder, what does it feel like when you're a student, when you were a student, and you found yourself as someone who, you know, was kind of willing to learn basically more than what's in the course, or craving to learn more than what's in the course. Did you find yourself there at all, or, and what did you do?
Yeah, definitely. I think I find myself there fairly often. I'll say that I would love it if we took it like another level farther, got a little bit deeper. I mean, partly they can't because of time, partly that not everybody's that interested in all of these subjects. Usually what I will try and do then is either explore it in a systematic way, like I was just talking about, finding some kind of course that I can go deeper on. Like, to give you an example, in the web design class, I guess it was third one, the one after yours, we touched on WordPress, but we briefly talked about the databases and whatnot behind it, all this complicated stuff but the professor said, oh, but we're not, I just want to give you the overview. I don't want to confuse you guys too much with this, but I was quite interested with that. So as part of that professional certificate, I learned a lot of SQL and the languages you need to interact with that. So it can be something like that, or it can be just taking the assignments to another level in a way, just trying to figure out how can I make this such that, you know, this isn't just an assignment quality assignment, if that makes sense, taking it to like a professional quality, trying to get more feedback on it, trying to, I guess, research, figure out what else there is.
Can that ever, I guess, backfire on you?
I would say so. Yeah. One of the things that I've been running into lately is that there is only so much time in the day. And if I'm trying to make every single assignment as outstanding as it can possibly be, or as I can possibly make it, you just run out of time and things start to fall by the wayside. So I think there is definitely a balance there. It's probably best to pick your battles. One of the pieces of advice I heard in a different one of Cal Newport's books was to just every semester pick one assignment to really knock out of the park, like blow it away, like blow the curve, I think was his expression. So that's probably something I should consider. I mean, this is the last semester of my diploma now, so I'm running out of time on that, but
yeah,
that's definitely something that can backfire if you're not too careful. So I think the key there is to pick your battles.
Is there ever a tension between meeting requirements and exceeding assignment requirements? So maybe in going to the next level, it actually leaves things that are worth grades behind. Does that ever happen?
I don't think that too much has happened to me, because I'm generally pretty good about sticking to and making sure I treat that assignment sheet like a checklist and going through and making sure that I do get that. As much as I try not to focus on the grades, I still find myself pulled to them and trying to get it as much as possible.
Mm-hmm.
But that is something that I have talked to about with some other students, that I don't know, that ultimately the grades should be subordinate to your profession, to making it sure that it's something that you could actually use in your portfolio, something that you actually want to show to employers. Like, that is far more important to the grades. So like, I try and always, as much as I can, have them align. And I think maybe I've just been lucky, or maybe I've been successful in managing to keep those aligned. But I think that if there is ever like a drastic conflict, the making sure they're good for employers is probably what should come first. I mean, I'm sure professors would understand. A lot of them, at least in this program, seem pretty cool. Like, they want you to succeed. So if you talk to them, I'm sure there could be some kind of exception made, but.
Yeah, I definitely struggle with like this. When I make an assignment, it's like, man, I really want, you want to give people a clear requirement so mm-hmm. that they're not feeling like, oh, like, what do I do? You also want to get out of their way.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's like, how do you do both? Right. Mm-hmm. How do you tell people do whatever you want? But by the way, it has to be this. Otherwise, like, it's not what you need.
Yeah.
It's definitely like I feel like it needs to be a negotiation. But I feel like not everyone, Aiden, has your sort of confidence. And if they don't see the black and white path, then they're not going to even move. Like, they're going to wait for it.
Mm-hmm.
Did you never feel like, oh, like this is a bit of an unknown and I can't take a step forward until I have it cleared up?
I think I can definitely, I do definitely fall into that. Like, to give you the example that I'm currently just continually trying to fight, is that I'm still working on my portfolio, like both the website and the content in it, and making it as good as it can be, while also actively trying to find internships and then starting to like try and find some kind of employment for after the diploma. So there's this part of me that wants to just wait, give it another week or two, until my portfolio is truly ready, and then I can start and it'll just blow them all away. But I know I've heard myself say that for so long now that I know that that's just going to continue going, that I'm going to continue saying that in a week or two, when it's done, there's going to be something else that will stop me, or that will come up in my mind as an excuse, essentially, and that you just kind of have to keep moving. Like, part of the, one of the things that I learned from the so good they can't ignore you, is that you just have to start, you have to pick a direction and start moving. And you can always change directions once you've started moving, but just continuing to move is so important.
I'm glad you added that caveat because, you know, yes, you got to keep moving and you could change, which you did actually. You didn't start in media comps.
I did not.
What happened?
Yeah, so before I got into the media communication program at Humber, I spent 2.5 years at Ryerson studying aerospace engineering.
And 2.5 years?
Yeah.
Wow, okay, sorry, carry on.
Yeah, it was a long, long time there. Not quite to the end, but getting there. To I guess answer the question that probably comes to a lot of people's mind, why would you switch, especially that far in? I think there were a few reasons, one of which is that I don't think I got into it for really any of the right reasons. Mm-hmm. Like I think a lot of the big ones that going through my mind at the time, either consciously or unconsciously, was that it sounded impressive.
Okay.
You know, it's something that people will go like, oh, wow, you're smart. That's
they
nice.
Can't ignore you if you're an aerospace engineer.
Yeah, exactly. And also, this might sound a little off to some people after I've said that it's aerospace engineering, but I kind of thought that it would be easy because I'd done well in math. I'd done well in physics. So I figured I could just keep that going, that it would just continue to be easy. Mm. And for a time it was. Like, it was weird how easy the first year was, and even the second year to an extent, but eventually it did start to pick up the difficulty curve there.
Right.
And I think also I never cared about any of the courses, which makes it really hard to do well or to try and pursue it.
Right.
And that really ties into, like, I couldn't see a future with that. I couldn't envision, like, people always say, or people seem to think that, you know, there's all these, I don't know, office jobs, I guess, that are just looking for anybody with a degree. But I don't know, it just doesn't make sense to me. Like, I wouldn't hire someone who had spent 4 years of their life doing something they didn't care about with any kind of plan. Just
right.
Like kind of drifting.
Right.
So I just needed a change, I think.
Yeah. And did you find, like, was any of that valuable? Did any of that, and not necessarily knowledge, because knowledge is one thing, but frameworks and mental models and ways to approach a problem and scope and things like that, has any of that sort of trickled into media comms? Or
it's surprising how similar they are in a lot of ways, especially with the process, like you were saying. Like, I learned the engineering design process or development process at Ryerson. And then I also learned more of the official, like, design process at Humber. And they're basically the same thing. Like, the engineers throw in a few more numbers, a little bit more math in making their decisions, but it's fundamentally the same steps of trying to figure out what exactly the problem is, what are the constraints, what are the objectives, trying to ideate, and then making prototypes, iterating, getting feedback. It's fundamentally the same. So I think that probably gave me a bit of a leg up there, that framework.
Yeah, I mean, there's so much value for designers to study other, I mean, not just engineering. I mean, I was reading one of Bill Nye's books, and he talks about the design triangle and how it's an inverted triangle. And so if you get something wrong at the beginning, it just makes it worse later on. And the cost of making a change at the beginning is far cheaper than making a change later on, right? And it was just like, that is, I mean, that's web design, that's print design, that's like, you know, and so it's just one of those things where it never hurts to know, as a designer, always that extra, like, for me, I studied literature and history before design college, and it's like that social sciences background and that sort of, like, literary background, like, I can't get away from it. It's only been ever been helpful.
Yeah, it seems like there are so many different ways that you can get inspiration or that you can pull ideas from. Like, design is so much about just pulling all these different ideas together and ways that haven't been combined before. So having just so many interests, so many different backgrounds is really nothing but helpful, I think.
And more than ever, I think there's like a self-conscious awareness of that in the design world. I feel like there was maybe like a golden age of design where someone like Dieter Rams or like Raymond Loewy, they were print designers, they were engineers, they were everything. They did like design, they were industrial designers, or the Eames, right? Ray and Charles Eames. They were designers, capital D, nothing before and nothing after the word. Mm. And like that kind of went away. I don't know why, but I feel like teams of people like them are like the next, maybe the next thing, like teams of people who are designer period, throw anything you got at me and I have the brains to approach it.
Oh man, I hope that is making a strong comeback, because I think I definitely identify with a lot of that, or I would like to identify with a lot of that. But I think part of the challenge is probably that like all of these industries, like there's design and then there's all the dozens or I assume hundreds of different disciplines inside design, have evolved so much that it's so hard to be an expert in all of them.
Yeah, oh man, I mean, I've been, I don't know, I call it a curse. I don't know. Time will tell, but I am a generalist. I can learn to do anything pretty quickly, mm-hmm. and I can do anything well, but I'm not the best at any single thing, right? I'm not even close, mm-hmm. but it's rare that you find something I can't do, and I still don't know if that's good or bad. We'll see. More and more when I look at, like, if you look at a UX tree, right? Mm-hmm. So you, like, if you look at what is user experience and what sort of happens in user experience, like, again, there's this awareness that everything is branches on a tree, sort of, and like the UX design is kind of the trunk, but it's a team and everyone is bringing different knowledge in. So more and more, and like media comms, I mean, look at your program, how many branches on that tree?
Yeah.
And, you know, unrelated, who would have thought that you would be a videographer? And well, Python's probably not in the course, but it's CSS, quite. HTML are.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's really out there.
Yeah. Yeah. That was part of what it really, I think, appealed to me in the MediaCom program, was that like we cover videography, photography, graphic design, web design. We are getting into project management now. We do marketing. We do writing. Like there's so much.
Yeah. Do you think that's a, like how much is of an obstacle is that for people, for your peers? Like it seems like it's something that's right up your alley, but for people who didn't envision writing or even web design, I mean, I know I teach web design and a lot of the students don't want to be taking it, right? They're not as enthusiastic as you. What other ways, like how else can we wrestle that situation?
Just like how do you, I don't want to say like deal with, but like how do you?
I mean, are there other, could it be electives? Could it be spreading out the options? You know, how streamlined should it be? Is there a benefit in streamlining it? Like if someone gets a 60 or a 70 and really haven't demonstrated a level of knowledge that they can take into industry, is it worth it?
Man, there's a lot of good questions tied up in there. Cause there is definitely, I think, even some value in just taking the courses. Even if you don't do super well, you're still getting 60% of the knowledge and you're still able to, I think, better communicate with people, in that discipline. Like after you graduate and you're working and you need to talk to like the web designer, you need to talk to the graphic designer, you're going to be better able to talk to them. So there is some utility in it just off of that. And I'm not sure, because if someone wants to specialize more, or if that's what they wanted right out of the gate, there are other programs for that, right? Like I'm still friends with a lot of the people in the ad and graph program who's more just pure like graphic design than mm-hmm. all the people in the MediaCom program, even though we shared like the common first semester. All right. Those courses, they wanted to go more right out of the gate into that. But it would be interesting to see a little bit more of an opportunity to specialize in this program. I don't know if there's just another program for that, but like get like a common like first 2 years or something of like trying all the different disciplines of media communication and even more broadly maybe, and then like taking another year even to specialize. Cause I feel like me personally, I'm starting to hit my stride. Like I'm starting to get to know more of what to like, what I like. And I would love just a little bit more opportunity. I feel like to get that right or to go a little bit deeper into some area. So that would be interesting.
You said that there's some things you would want to go deeper into. Those things, do you feel like if there was like electives to go deeper into those as an autodidact, would you rather just go deeper into those things in on your own time? Mm. And then go to school for the things where it's kind of like, I don't have the energy for this. So if someone wants to give me a degree to do it, now I have the energy. But the other things I'll just learn on my own.
Mm.
Or no, that doesn't fly.
No, I think you might have a point there. Yeah, I do really like the commitment devices for making sure I pick other things up. Like that's one of the most useful things I think with school is just making sure I continue to develop those. Like I would not have gone anywhere near as far with photography if I hadn't been really forced to in order to get the degree. And sometimes that's like, I'm not sure about the utility of that. Like to come back on photography, it's not my favorite. It's something I struggle with. I can see the value in it and I can enjoy it sometimes, but just on looking at the opportunity costs, I'd prefer to do other things. But there are other times where it really works out. Like I did not go into the program anticipating I would enjoy graphic design or web design as much as I did. Like I went in like largely because I wanted to focus in on the videography, but as I've gone through, that's fallen by the wayside a lot for more of like the web design and the graphic design stuff to an extent, and even the writing to an extent. That's also been fun.
So if there's something you are pursuing, so you did a Harvard X course. Imagine you go out and do something like that, and then you find yourself in maybe first or second year web design. You might just be ahead of that, and I'm wondering like what makes sense to you. Showing up to that course and getting a 90 or just being exempt and not having to do it and freeing up that to, you know, sleep in or take another course or fast track.
I, without much hesitation, would probably go for the exempt if I have the option. Like if I can take a course that's going to better match my skill level and push me a lot more, that I would definitely go for that. Yeah.
Yeah. And would you take on more or would you take a break? Or I guess it would vary.
Knowing myself, I'd probably take on more in some sort of way. I mean, it is nice to have that break, but I would just fill it with other things on the side. As I know myself, I'd try and learn some other things, but I think I'd probably fill up the schedule again. Just add in another course.
There is something, at least there used to be something called PLAR, prior learning assessment. And so we had our writing skills and I was exempt from that. And then we had a business writing and I was not exempt from that. But there was an opportunity given to me, which was, if you write the final assignment, we could take that as the thing. So that was an exemption. Cool. And then there was another exemption, which was, there's design history and I have a degree in history and I was like, I don't need to take this. And I ended up getting like 96 or like something obscene. And it was sort of like, this is a breakdown in this system in multiple levels. Cause first of all, the people teaching this don't understand how history is taught, which is through, I mean, design. I mean, the artifacts we have, which exist and tell us the stories of the past are editorial design. And graphic design and print design, like that's what, right? Mm-hmm. So like it's not possible to study history without studying art and design. Mm. So it seemed like they didn't understand that. But also if you think about a system that is in a weird way ranking students against each other, I now have an unfair, like that is weighted in a way which puts me in a certain position, which makes no sense because I now have in a design degree, I now have a 90 something where people who are way better designers than me don't have a 90 something. And I don't know if it makes sense. Why should I be on the dean's list when there are people who are better designers than me just because I have a history degree and they don't?
I mean, I think it works, because if they've established that for this program, say, like, history is for some reason or another an essential part, and that's just one of the skill sets you need, and you happen to just already have that great, then that kind of reflects your overall skill set. Like, if you average all your skills somehow, that's boosting you up anyways. So
I'll play devil's advocate. Let's just theorize here. History is in the curriculum because it provides a framework for thinking about design.
Mm-hmm.
Whether or not you actually need that framework to execute effective design is, there's no certainty there, right? Like, there are people who have no knowledge of design history who could be excellent designers.
Mm-hmm.
So on that average, like, that's the exact problem. That average between my type 1-1 and history 101 is irrelevant, because you see what I'm saying? I don't know how relevant it really is.
I think I agree with what you're saying. I don't think that's really devil's advocate, because I agree with you.
Yes.
Like, going back to the first thing you said, employers looking at your work, they're not looking at your grades. So, like, if the history helps your design, awesome. Then it helps your design. If it doesn't, then, you know, it.
And if you don't need it to help your design, mm-hmm. which many people don't, well,
mm-hmm.
yeah, I don't think Milton Glaser studied design. Actually, he did. But I mean, some designers have not, right? They're not mm-hmm. from that tradition. Anyways, it's just an interesting thing that I think about sometimes, about just grades and scoring and requirements for an assignment and individual student motivations.
Mm-hmm.
I could talk about that for hours.
Yeah. And I mean, one thing I do want to add too is that, like, coming from it from the system perspective, I think that getting an exemption or something is the right way to go about it. But, like, if you are the individual student in that class and you haven't been able to get the exemption, but you know everything already, I think it's, in that situation, up to you to just try and find ways to learn to make the most of it. Just, again, try and, like, how can you double down on the assignment? Go, like, much further, because you're obviously, you know the stuff, so you can get that to, like, the 100% on the assignment easier. How do you get to, like, 150, say, in your opinion? How can you push yourself? Yeah.
Yeah, I got to say, I was more worried about the fact that I was bartending till 3:30 in the morning the night before, and now I still have to write this history paper. Maybe I have one in my filing cabinet that will do. That would have been my impression. But I applaud you. I applaud your energy.
That's fair. It's easier when you're not bartending till 3:30 in the morning.
Yeah. Yeah. It was a little, but I mean, hey, I wouldn't change it. So it was great. So it was a good experience. So yeah. So I hope anyone listening is now hip to prior learning assessment. And I know more than ever, the students are, have previous education. And it's always so, so valuable, whether it's engineering or fine arts or social sciences. It's just so good. I'm interested, though, why you like videography but not photography.
Honestly, I've drifted away from the videography as well, but the idea I kind of had going into it was that I'd like to be some kind of content creator. Like, I see all the people on YouTube or whatnot making their own content, be it mm-hmm. about, various different topics. And I liked that idea, and I enjoy filming myself, but I don't really enjoy filming other people or photographing other people.
Okay.
Yeah, I think there's a little bit of social anxiety coming in there, that just, it's hard to direct other people.
Oh man, I haven't done a lot of photography, but I have done some. And just to get comfortable with a subject in a studio taking a portrait, and, like, it's hard, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. It really is, yeah.
It's hard, and it's hard to make people, like, first you got to get comfortable with yourself, then you got to make the subject comfortable with themselves. which is flipping hard. And then it's this idea that, you know, I don't like my picture taken. And so when I'm at like an event doing event photography and I'm the guy with the camera, I'm like, I'm that asshole, aren't I? And, you know, you never would have thought of it because I love photography and I love cameras, but I hate doing it. It's so weird. So I don't know if that's what you meant when you said you prefer taking pictures of your, like, videography of yourself rather than other people.
Yeah, I don't know. It's just easier in a sense because I know what I want and I know that I'm willing to take the time to get to where I need to go. But, like, there's this whole other dimension, too, where I'm learning to use the camera and all the settings and, like, fiddling with it and messing up, and I'm not sure how long this is going to take, and I feel like I'm wasting someone's time, which may or may not be true. That's purely me, like, projecting onto the other person. But then this is this whole, like, mess of thoughts going on in my head that's – I mean, it's good to be in that situation and to force myself through that. I think that's a helpful experience, but it's not a fun one.
No. The threat of failure never goes away. And I think people, they say that, I read a book by a guy named Ross Baird, and in it he claims that the single most prevalent feature of successful entrepreneurs is single-mindedness. Mm-hmm. So sometimes I wonder, like, these people who never feel failure, or never fear failure and don't feel it when it happens. It's like, how do you not end up like just penniless and broken? But they don't. And it's kind of like, man, I'm worried about whether or not I should be stopped down to F1.8 or F2.2, you know, whether or not there's going to be a little bit of blur between the nose and the eye because my depth of field is not right. And it's like, this person is like gambling like millions of dollars on a startup. It's just so, it's like, I don't know. I it's such a weird thing.
Yeah, I don't know. There's a lot to unpack in that.
Yeah, sorry. Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, I don't know. Like, to a certain extent, it's good to sweat the details a bit to get something right because there's some helpfulness in that. Like, you need to figure out the right f-stop in order to get a good photo.
Yeah.
Much the same as you need to, you know, sweat some details when you're investing in a startup. Like, if you don't, like, check all the boxes, make sure you do your due diligence, you, as I understand it, at least, you will get burned. Not that I have any experience in venture capitalism, but.
Yeah. 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 It's very, very interesting. As a student, I was in my mid-20s and like, I was working and, like, I had so much going on that I just compartmentalized school and grades as kind of like a nice to have, not a need to have. But I know that not everyone does that. Not everyone wants to do that. And I don't even recommend it necessarily. But it's just an interesting thing to think about what motivates people and what gets people through the day.
Yeah. I think I've become larger direction motivated. Like, I used to know all my grades. I'd keep the spreadsheet and know exactly what grade I had to get on the final exams to get what grade on the final mark and all that. But, like, at this point, I don't even know exactly what my average is. I know it's good and I don't have to worry about it, but I could not tell you an exact number or any of the exact numbers for any of the classes really for the past few semesters, which I think is good. Like, if you're really focused on the grades, you're kind of doing it wrong to an extent. Like, you should really be focused, you know, every assignment, try and do the best that you can with the time that you have. But then when it comes to the big picture, you really want to make sure you're looking at the bigger picture, like outside of grades. How is this work going to look to employers or to other people? How does this fit into my skill set? What skills am I developing? All of that. I think those are far more important, and I've definitely been trying to pay more attention to them.
I'm always trying to get to a point where we can have it all. All of those things, you said grades, and then you listed portfolio, getting a job, showing industry that you have what is needed. If you can show industry what is needed, then why aren't the grades there? If everything's working, The grade should be fine. The grade should always be fine. Sometimes I wonder, like, do we even need the grade? Maybe. I mean, obviously, if you have a 10-question math quiz and you get 8 right, well, it's 8 out of 10. There's no, you know. But, like, things like redos, like, how common are redos on assignments? And should there not always be a redo until you get to the point where you have 100%?
Yeah.
And if you, right? And if you do that, though, then it's like, well, like, everyone would get 100% eventually, in which case, it's pass-fail.
Yeah. Which, I don't know, is there a bad thing with having it be pass-fail? Like, I guess that's less prestigious, but...
It's a deep, there's a deprogramming involved, even for myself.
Mm-hmm.
And all sorts of structures, I mean, the sort of lattice that we, like, everything that we... Like, think about funding, think about scholarships and bursaries, mm-hmm. think about streaming out of high school into, like, it upsets everything.
Yeah.
And it doesn't work in every, it works in design, I think, but it doesn't work in other, every discipline, does it? I don't know. The plane flies or it doesn't, you know?
Yeah.
So, but maybe then it is pass-fail, even in aerospace. And, like, do you create?
I think it might work because, like, the whole point kind of is that it proves that you've done something or proves that you've got some kind of knowledge or at least this, like, bare minimum. So as long as that barrier is still there, that it's not, say, like, easy to get the pass, that, like, there's actually a lot of work to get to that pass. Like, it's not like, okay, I've gotten to 50 and now I've passed. It's like, okay, to get to the pass, you need, like, to keep it in the, say, in the realm of our current grading system, like an 80, say, and then you pass, like, right. you'll have to get it almost, like, all right, but you can redo up to that point. Like, if someone's able to eventually get up there, I don't know that I see the issue with that. Like, that's, they've developed some skills then, haven't they?
Isn't it the point?
Yeah.
Yeah. And in a way we kind of do that, right? Cause we've moved, I believe you need mostly 60s before to pass. So in a way, like, if you think about how top heavy that is in a grading schema, which, I mean, maybe you'll appreciate this as someone with an engineering background. I've never understood using a 100-point grading scale where pretty much everyone fits in between 60 and 80. Because we all know what a bell curve looks like. A normal distribution of ability would be around 50. Hmm. Right?
Yeah.
But we've shrunk the entire bell curve in between 60 and 100, mm-hmm. roughly. And then we've clustered like one standard deviation within about 70 and 80, mm-hmm. which means there's this absolutely ridiculous gradient between 80 and 90, which is like super sharp. Mm-hmm. And then after 90, almost nobody's there, which means like the difference between an 85 and a 90 is gigantic. And the difference between a 70 and 80 is very small.
Hmm.
It doesn't take a lot to move that needle, right?
That's true, yeah.
Because we don't use the whole scale.
Hmm.
So, like, I don't know if that means we're already just moving towards a pass-fail system. You tell me.
I don't know. That is interesting. I don't know. It makes sense in some ways because it's like, okay, if you think of it like, do you have 0% of the knowledge that we teach in this course? Do you have 100% of the knowledge? If you have less than half of the knowledge we gave you, then that's not great. If most people are just able to, I guess, get like that 75%, that seems to make sense. Like we're saying like, okay, if you get 3/4 of the information, you know the majority. You get the gist of this whole thing. You know enough. But that is interesting, like what you mentioned, that sharp drop-off curve. Like, I guess if you wanted to fix that, you'd have to do what? Like, some kind of logarithmic curve?
Which doesn't make any sense, because human ability is not on that kind of curve. Anyways, who knows?
Yeah.
I have no idea about that. I don't even know how we got here. This is supposed to be about you.
I don't know. It's interesting stuff. It's interesting ideas.
Yeah. So, okay, speaking of interesting ideas and, you know, why we're here, one of the reasons I wanted you on this podcast is because you have had a unique student experience, having come from a different school and having being involved in all these other things like Toastmasters. Do you want to talk about that at all, or
about just being involved in a lot of things, or Toastmasters?
Both. That's one of the things. So,
yeah, I mean, I like being involved in a lot of things. I mean, I like and I dislike it. I love that it's got this great commitment device that I keep on going out, and especially with something like Toastmasters or where there are other people, it's also like a socializing commitment, because I can hermit if left to my own devices. So getting out and talking to other people is, you know, I've heard it's good for the, you know, the whole mental health and all that jazz. So there's that aspect, and it also, you know, practices skills a lot of the time. So that's fantastic. And it's all just fun, and it allows me to explore a lot of different interests in a way that's less committed to a certain extent from school. And the first way that I did that was with Toastmasters. That was my first real experiment or trying to do something outside of engineering. And I think that gave me a lot of confidence. Like, wow, okay, I've got some skills here. I'm actually like half decent at this. I can do things outside of school. This is fun. Because up till that point, it had been like 2 years of no extracurricular involvement, maybe like one or two things here or there, but basically nothing, just school, just so that I could concentrate on those grades and make sure that no other commitment could get in the way of them. But then I experimented with that, and that went well. You know, I went through all the different levels in the programs, giving all sorts of speeches, and that was good. And then eventually for one of the projects for that, I decided to start a podcast, just in part to like prove to myself that I could do it. Like that I could really put something out there. Like I had no idea how to make it happen, but I decided that I was going to. And I reached out to Evan, and he thought that it was a cool idea as well. And we just started doing it. We just started making them and putting them out there. And that has been so much fun. Like some of my fondest memories now are of essentially taking business trips out to Waterloo to go see him in person and just record the episodes. That was so much fun to just like travel out there and hang out with him and record something. And that has, again, like it socializes me. It like builds up my skills because I get all these commitments like, okay, if I'm going to talk about this subject, be it So Good They Can't Ignore You, be it the 5 a.m. club, be it Tao Te Ching, I actually have to know something. I need to have some coherent thoughts. And that has really put or really solidified all of my knowledge, I think, or a lot of my knowledge, because just reading something and being familiar with it is so much different from being able to externalize it and talk about it and explain it to someone else. So that's been immensely helpful.
Another huge concept in design, by the way, like implicit versus explicit understanding of why design works.
Yeah, no, that is something that I am trying to work on right now with a couple of friends from the Add and Graph program. We made a little design critique group, and we're meeting up a couple times a week just to critique designs that we've found and talk about what we like, what we don't like, and why it works.
Wow. That's meta, man. I mean, look, I never realized how bad I was at it until I started teaching and I had to do it. And it was like, oh man, this is hard. Like why isn't this good? I need to. So that's super awesome.
I definitely encourage anybody to try and make a group. It's really helpful, and it's so fascinating to see different perspectives because they have very different tastes than me. And I am gaining just in this like, what, 2-3 weeks that we've been doing it so far, I've gained so much knowledge into a lot of different styles. Like, you know, those kind of designs where there's just text and shape everywhere. What? See, I'm still learning this stuff right now, but I think it's called like grunge or something, where it's all just kind of this mismatch, like scrapbook looking thing.
Okay.
It's kind of a mess, to be honest. But like one of the guys in the group really likes that kind of design, and we've been analyzing some of it, and it's so fascinating to peel back the layers and to figure out the story behind every little element. Because even though it looks random and like just this big mess, there's like this intentionality behind it and all the little details. And like you said, like figure out how to explicitly state what is good or what we like about these designs.
That's really cool. you know, I'm going to take a second to plug RGD here, if you don't mind. If anyone is looking for a community where they can do that, you can always join the Association of Registered Graphic Designers. And I think they were kind of my Toastmasters. Like, I didn't get involved in school, even though everyone told me to. And I got involved after. And it was totally worth it because, yeah, it definitely opened up things for me. So, like, any co-curricular, by the way, I would have loved to have more time to talk about co-curriculars and how that might fit into a schema of that gets recognized by mainstream education systems. Because, you know, how a media comms program can't find a way to give you credit for working, for being part of an international media communications organization.
Mm-hmm.
It would be great, I think, if we could solve these problems. But I think creating a demand for it is what has to come first.
Mm-hmm.
The last thing I want to ask you
is,
Aiden, now that you've graduated, if you could talk to your younger self, what would you like to know right from the get-go that you didn't?
This is a tough question. Because, like, I don't know. There's a couple of dimensions to it. Like, one is that I'm fairly happy so far with how I've turned out. So I don't know if I would change much of anything.
Oh, we're invoking time paradoxes. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
And also that if I could go back and tell my past self something, I don't know that he'd listen.
Right.
Right. Like, when you're trying to impart wisdom, it's, you just can't sometimes because, like, people just, they have their mindset and they're stuck in it. And, you know, you can't really, like, get an idea to someone unless it's just that, like, perfect right time that they're ready to receive it. So that I don't know if I could say anything that would change my thoughts.
So now that you've been subversive, let me rephrase the question. What is something you started doing during your time as a student that you would think either I should have done it sooner or anyone else should start, everyone should start doing this?
I would probably say something along the lines of honing my skills and portfolio. I wish I'd really started that sooner. Like, that was really something that started in the third of four semesters, like, seriously trying to do that. And I just can't help thinking, like, if I had started that earlier, it's an exponential curve, right? As your skills increase, your work just keeps on getting better and better. So I don't know where I would be at now. Like, I you know, like I said, I don't really have regrets, but that, if I could, that would probably be one thing that I would change. Just trying to push the skills outside of class a little bit more, just in any of the ways I've talked about, like, be it taking courses online, be it adding another course to your schedule, be it, like, finding a design critique group, be it joining a club, just anything that really pushes you or tries to, like, bring your skills, your portfolio to the next level.
Aiden Dennehy, thank you for joining us.
Hey, thank you for having me.
Pleasure.